Okay. So now I will give you these three refuges and the five precepts. For those of you who know what they are, because sometimes people forget what they are. That's why yesterday when I gave the three refuges and the five precepts, I gave them backwards. So should I do them backwards or the right way, or should I do them scrambled? Scrambled. Okay, we do the five precepts scrambled today. To see if you can still remember these. Okay, we'll give the Namo Tassa first of all. And when you do anything in life, you must always give it everything you've got. So when we do the precepts of the Namo Tassa, I don't want to hear Namo Tassa Bhagavato Rahat. Namo Tassa with full voice. So give it everything you've got, because if you put energy and life into what you're doing, you get energy, life, and happiness back. Okay? So I'll begin, and when I'm finished, then you start. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. That completes the three refuges. Now, instead of scrambling the five precepts, let's do them in English. I undertake the precept to refrain from killing living beings. I undertake the precept to refrain from stealing. I undertake the precept to refrain from adultery. I undertake the precept to refrain from lying. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking alcohol and non-medicinal drugs. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. I'm sorry I can't do that in Chinese or Bahasa Malay. So I did it in English today. So it's great that in the Dhamma we can always be a little innovative, because I always notice that when we always just stick to old traditions without understanding what those traditions are, that usually those traditions become meaningless and people don't understand them, the whole thing dies away. So it's great to be innovative, and but keeping the original message. Which is why I titled this talk in modern speech, Getter Better with Metta. Because that's how our young people speak these days. Metta is awesome. Dhamma is cool. So if you ask what you've been doing today, you've just been jamming with Ajahn. Now, one of the great things with like loving kindness is this incredible, powerful teaching taught by the Buddha. Not just saying to love your enemies, but telling you how to do it. And the Buddhism has gone into such great detail on what metta means, this beautiful word of loving kindness, of acceptance, of warmth, of learning to be with things, embracing things for the growth and benefit of yourself and other people. It spent so many years developing this idea, this concept, that now we have this incredibly, awesomely powerful way of dealing with life. And in fact, that metta is so powerful that many people can cure almost any psychological problem with loving kindness, and even with some of your physical problems as well. Which is why that in our temples over in Australia, and probably even here in Malaysia, many doctors refer their patients to monks. And we don't charge. So you have free health insurance when you join the BGF. Free mental health insurance. And in fact, it's so well known, the benefits of such things like metta meditation. So recently I went to the United States last November to do a Dharma tour over there. And interestingly, for the Eastern Horizon, I went into a number of Dharma centers and I saw the Eastern Horizon on the desks in their library. So you're penetrating not just the European market, you're also penetrating the US market as well. Well done. So when I went over there, I heard from some of my monks in California, this is true, you can check it out if you wish, if you can get a monk like myself or some other recognized teacher to make a called a statutory declaration that you are a meditator, you can claim a large rebate on your health insurance. Because everybody knows it works. It creates more peace, more happiness, and with that happiness comes greater health. You just don't tend to get so sick. And not only that, if you have the loving kindness in your heart, you find you don't have so many psychological problems. You can hold down a relationship with your partner. You can do so much better in life that sometimes I wonder, where are all the other people in Malaysia today? They should also be here listening. This should be televised live. Next time, okay. Because getting better with metta just helps everybody. This is non-sectarian. It can go across all religions. And this is why it's so powerful. It's getting to the heart of the problem. And the heart is where loving kindness comes from. And certainly in my life I've seen just how powerful this loving kindness can be. Just how deeply moving, how it touches on the very essence of our lives. And reforms our life into something very beautiful and wonderful. So in these talks today, I decided to split up the talks into three. In the old three time zones of past, future and present. About how we can use metta loving kindness towards the past. And after lunch, towards the future. And last of all, and perhaps most importantly, which is why I leave the best to the last, how do we have loving kindness to whatever's happening to us now? Loving kindness on the three time zones. Because sometimes people think that loving kindness must only be to human beings or animals, people with life. But no, you can have loving kindness to inanimate things as well, to situations in your life, to diseases in your body, or to experiences, especially in your past. I'm now going to introduce one of the first of my stories. This was a very common story from my teacher Ajahn Chah, which never made it into my book, save for volume 2. First book is called Opening the Door of Your Heart. I went into a bookshop and found it in the medical section. They thought it was about heart operations. The next one will be Tearing the Door Off the Hinges. For this particular story, in the true tradition of my teacher, he made it down to earth. Amusing, but so meaningful. It was a story of the two chicken farmers. And it introduces the session this morning of having metta towards the past. A long time ago, there were two chicken farmers in neighboring farms. The first chicken farmer would get up very early in the morning, take the basket and go to the chicken shed to collect the produce of the previous night. He opened the door of the chicken shed, went inside and collected all the chicken dung, all the little pellets which the chickens had excreted the night before. He put that into his basket and left all the eggs in the shed to rot. Now that was a very dumb chicken farmer. The second chicken farmer went into the shed in the morning with his basket. He collected all the eggs and he left all the chicken shit to rot. That was a very clever chicken farmer, because with the eggs he could make some omelettes for his family and also sell the remainder in the market for some money. Now the moral of that story is, whenever we think of the past, whenever we collect all the memories of what we produced in the previous day, week or year, what do we collect? Do we collect the eggs or the poo? And I think that many of you will associate with the first type of chicken farmer. Whenever you think of what's happened to you today, last week or last year, why is it that we collect only the smelly, unpleasant stuff and leave all the good stuff, the eggs, to rot? We forget about the good stuff which happened to us. For example, you may come home from work and your partner might say, "Did you have a good day at work today? And what do you remember? What do you bring home from work?" "No, my boss argued with me today, or somebody didn't do it right, or the telephone was out of order, the computer crashed." Why is it that we always collect the stinky, rotten stuff? Instead, we can be like the second chicken farmer. We do look at the past. Why don't we collect the beautiful stuff? And we leave all the rubbish back in the office to rot there. Why is it when we come home from college, from work, or even just from shopping, why can't we just say, "Oh, had a wonderful time today"? Why can't we just collect the good stuff? The point is that as human beings, we have been taught this, what we call the fault-finding negative mind. Whenever we look at the past, we always remember what went wrong. We collect the dung. We don't collect the eggs. And sometimes people would say, "Oh, but Ajahn Brahm, if you don't remember the past, if you forget the past, you'll probably repeat the mistakes of the past. You can learn from your mistakes." Any psychologist would know something which the Buddha taught thousands of years ago. You learn much more from your successes than you learn from your mistakes. You learn from successes much better than from mistakes. So if we can remember, when we look at the past, all the wonderful things which happened, all the great achievements which have happened, all the successes which we've been part of, Not only does that encourage us, lift up our happiness level and our energies, it makes us want to repeat those successes again. We're looking on the past and picking out the good stuff, collecting the eggs, and that way we will find that actually our happiness levels do increase. Talking about eggs, the story comes to my mind that recently another Buddhist temple, actually from Singapore, in Perth, we're all friends together. I don't care whether it's Mahayana, Hinayana or Vajrayana. I think you all know that I've started a new yana. It's called the Hahayana. There's the Hahayana, I've got you to laugh. But they were having difficulty because they'd just come from Singapore and they were trying to build a monastery just to the north of Perth. And they were having difficulty with the local council, with their planning permission. Now, Australia's a pretty open country, but nevertheless, sometimes the people don't know how it's done. So when they tried by themselves, the council were very upset and they had complaints from the neighbours about all the noise which they thought was going to come from a Buddhist temple. And of course, Buddhist temples are the quietest of places. But nevertheless, they didn't realize that. So I had to go and sort out the problem. So when I met the council, I read out a recent piece of research. Because I was a scientist. I still am a scientist. And I keep being informed of some of these interesting facts which have been proven again and again. And this was a scientific study which was done in Taiwan. Because in Taiwan, they found that a duck usually lays an egg once every 12 days. However, they exposed the ducks to some Buddhist chanting. And the ducks laid an egg once every 8 days. So I said this to this council, if you have the temple here, it's going to improve productivity. And I had the evidence there to show it. So the more temples we have around KL, the economy is going to improve. The duck's going to lay more eggs. But be very careful, because I told people, if that happens to ducks, what happens to you girls if you if you listen to too much Buddhist chanting? Anyway, I won't pursue that further. So that when we look upon the past, why is it we can't actually pick up the good stuff? We learn much better from the good stuff. I know that somebody kept on saying, if you just recall all the good things you've done, you get a big head. And that's what I was taught when I was young. Don't praise yourself. Don't remember the good things from the past. Just remember your faults. And you know, work on those to become a better person. You can become a better person, not by working on your faults, by remembering all the good things which happened. But also, you don't get a big head. You get a big heart. And this is what we're supposed to be doing in life. To get big hearts. In our academic institutions, in our schools, colleges, places of further education. We're always taught to educate our brains. To stuff so much more information in there. And here in temples or in seminars such as this, we're educating our heart to getting a bigger and bigger and bigger heart. So big that everybody is allowed in. That every part of your past is embraced and nothing is kept out. Only when you allow everything in with this beautiful, all-embracing loving kindness can you finally be at peace with yourself. The idea of loving kindness comes from, in my mind anyway, comes from a story which many of you know, but one of the most meaningful stories of my life. There's a few occasions which really stand out, which have made me what I am. And one of those occasions was a teaching I got from my father when I was listening to the song about the Brahma of my heart. And about your respect to your parents. I remembered my father
who was not just giving me lullabies to send me to sleep, but was also teaching me. And one of the things he taught me meant so much. And of course, I've shared it with countless people ever since. And it was a time when I was only about 13 or 14 years of age. Just a young man entering adolescence. With all the confusion, and with all of the peer pressure, and with all the dangers of drugs and other things which were, you know, around in London at that time as well. On this occasion, my father was very poor. Mostly because he was sickly for most of his life. He was born in Liverpool with very poor parents. And on this occasion, he took me in his car. We parked in a side street of the poor suburb of London where I lived. He stopped the car and he turned round to me. And I will never forget what he said. Not until I die. He said, "Whatever you do in your life, son, whatever you do, always remember this. The door of my house will always be open to you. Whatever you do in your life, son, the door of my house will always be open to you." I was only a 13-year-old. I didn't really understand what he meant. All I knew was that it was important, and I kept it in mind. The reason I didn't understand it was because his house was a small apartment owned by the government with a subsidized rent. We were so poor that we weren't afraid of burglars. Actually, we liked to leave our door open, hoping a burglar might come in, take pity on us, and leave something. But nevertheless, I remembered what he said, and later on when I became a monk, these things come back to you. And now you may have the wisdom and the clarity of mind through meditation to understand what my father meant, because he died a few years later when I was only 16. I realized what he meant to say was not the door of his house, but the door of his heart. That was the house he was really meaning. What he meant to say was, "Son, whatever you do in your life, wherever you go, however you turn out, the door of my heart is always open to you." It was what we call unconditional loving kindness. A metta with no strings attached. He would love me, accept me. I was his son, no matter what I ever did or how I turned out. It was the unconditional part of it which meant so much to me. It was not "I will love you if." It was "I will love you anyway, no matter what." I understood that that was the meaning of metta. But I extended that further and further and further. And I will extend that similarly later on, especially when we talk about opening the door of your heart to yourself. Here this morning, I'm encouraging you to say, "Whatever has happened to me in the past, whatever I have done, whatever has occurred, the door of my heart is open to all of that." As you allow the past to come in, as you embrace everything which has ever happened to you, it's called forgiveness. There's an old Australian story of two men who were meeting together at a reunion. They had been soldiers in the same unit during the Second World War. Both had served in the Malay Peninsula and were in Singapore when the Japanese army captured that city. They were interned in the POW camps and treated very badly. They were the few of the lucky ones to survive, but only just. And at their reunion, they met each other, great friends, because of the troubles they had been through. And one said to the other, as they do in Australia, "Mate, have you forgiven the Japanese yet for what they did to us in those camps during the war?" And his friend said, "Forgive? I can never forgive what I saw. What they did to us, the way they killed and tortured our friends, never, I can never forgive that. What about you?" And his friend said, "I forgave them years ago. You, my friend, are still in the prisoner of war camp." There was such a meaningful exchange until that Australian soldier, now in his 60s or 70s, until he too could forgive, he was still being tortured by the experiences of his past. This is one of the problems which we have when we still carry as a terrible burden the pain of the past. What loving kindness does is to accept, embrace, to forgive, and to learn. When we say we forgive the past, it doesn't mean that we approve of the past and saying what a wonderful thing happened. But instead we say we can embrace it. We can maybe understand that those soldiers that don't know what they were doing or why they were doing it, but it doesn't help anybody to have this pain, this sense of revenge, this wanting to hurt whatever happened to you in the past. If you're a Buddhist, whatever that person did who hurt you, you know they've done bad karma. That bad karma has to ripen sooner or later. They're going to be punished. They're going to hurt for that. You do not need to get involved. It's the natural process of justice. If you're a Muslim or a Christian, you believe that God or Allah will do the punishing. If you don't believe in any God, if you're an atheist, you believe that you're going to have to go through psychological therapy for a long time afterwards. Whatever it is, you can't get away from the consequences of your actions. What it means that you don't need to be the punisher, that you can forgive, and the whole process will work its way out without you. So it's important to have loving kindness and forgiveness towards the past, to forgive your enemies and don't linger with anger. The trouble is that too often that we get angry not understanding the full picture and why a person said that or did that. You know, one of the monks I grew up with was always getting angry and shouting at people. And we thought that he was a bad character until we find out he suffered from terrible migraines. When I learned that, I thought, my goodness, if I had that terrible pain, I would have got grumpy with other people as well. It wasn't really his fault. It was a physical ailment which he was going through. Or that other very important story of the man who went to the market. It's another egg story. The man who went to the market to get some eggs. And this particular time he had the afternoon off work and his wife sent him to the market. "Darling, can you go to the market and get some eggs for me? I'm so busy cooking dinner." And he was a very nice husband. There are some around. A very nice husband. And he said, "Certainly, darling, I will get you some eggs." But he'd never been to the market before, so she had to give him instructions and the money and sent him off. As soon as he got into the market, this young man came straight up to him and said, "You've got a face like a camel. The back end of a camel, that is. And you smell of dog poo." And he started to abuse him in even worse ways. Now sometimes the stories I tell, it's very hard for me to actually to give words of abuse because I'm a monk and I don't know such words. My vocabulary is very limited. Talking about metta and loving kindness, I have lots of words for that. But when it comes to verbal abuse, but anyway, some terrible words. And this man, this husband, it was the first time he'd been to the market.
He didn't know this young man. And so he kept saying, what are you saying this to me for? What have I done? But that never stopped this young man. He started scolding and abusing and criticizing, and some terrible words were said. Worst of all, it was in public, in the marketplace, so everybody could hear. Would you get embarrassed? He did. He got so embarrassed, he turned around and went home. As soon as he got in the door, his wife said, you're early, dear. Did you get the eggs? No. And don't ever send me to that stupid market ever again. I don't want to go. People are just so horrible in that marketplace. He was really upset. Now the wife, as wives know how to, they know how to soothe their husbands. Calm them down. There, darling. Until he calmed down enough to get some sense out of the fellow. And when he calmed down, then she asked him, what happened? And then he said what happened. This young man had scolded him and cursed him and abused him and compared him to a camel, the back end. I don't even know the fellow. Why did he say that to me? I'm so humiliated. And the wife said, oh, what did he look like? And when the husband described the man's appearance, straight away she recognized him. Oh, it's him. The poor man, when he was young, had an accident. He hit his head and suffered permanent brain damage. The poor boy will never go to school. He can't get a job, nor will he ever find a wife to share his evenings with. We know that he is mentally deranged, brain damaged. We let him come into the market. Sometimes he curses me, sometimes he abuses someone else. But don't worry, he's just crazy. As soon as the husband understood the reason why that abuse came, it was only from a crazy man, all his anger and his upset completely disappeared. When the wife saw that, she took her opportunity and said, I still need those eggs, darling. Okay, I'll go get them. Don't mind that guy, he's crazy. Okay. So he went back into the market with the basket. This crazy guy came up to him again. Hey, hold your noses, everybody. Here comes dog poo. Close your eyes. The camel face is coming. But this time it didn't matter because it was a crazy guy. He went to the store, brought the eggs, being abused all the way to the market, in the market, as he went out, being cursed and abused all the way. It didn't matter anymore because it was a crazy guy. Hit his head, brain damaged. And the moral of that story is, if you come home and your wife scolds you, don't get upset. She's probably hit her head that day. Because all anger, according to the Buddha, is temporary insanity. Why would ever you scold your husband, or scold your wife, or scold your kids, or whatever? So just put it down till they've hit their head, and they're out of their mind. So that way, when we understand the reason why people say and do these things, whether they harm us physically or verbally, it's easy to forgive. Well, when we understand why, and we understand why we should, then we can. So loving kindness is embracing the diversity of human beings in this world, understanding they're not perfect. We all suffer from temporary insanity from time to time. We may not hit our head, but our life gets bumped and hurt and bruised by some of the experiences which we have in our daily life. And sometimes we take that out on the people we love. Whenever a person close to you, someone you love, gets angry at you, never think that it's your fault. Isn't it the case we think, why me? Why me? What have I done? You should know by now it's nothing to do with you. It's everything to do with them. They're scolding, they're getting angry, not because you've done something wrong, because they don't feel well. Something has hurt or harmed them. And they usually take it out on the ones they love
as a way of like releasing this pent up tension, thinking that their partner is the one who will really understand them. So if someone shouts at you, gets angry, don't get upset. Just give that person a big hug and say, never mind. Don't take it personally. This is how we can forgive the past. Now when we're forgiving the past, sometimes people say there are some things which you can never forgive. There's some things which have been so cruel, so hurting, so uncalled for, you think, no, I can't forgive that at all. One of the most powerful statements of the Buddha was, there's nothing, absolutely nothing, which you cannot forgive. There's nothing which you can't learn from. There's nothing you can't grow from. A couple of years ago, I'm not sure if this lady's here this evening, but a couple of years ago, in a counseling session after one of my talks, a woman came up to me, her problem, I had to give her a few minutes counseling. She'd been raped. Now, for those of you who are men, you can't understand what it feels like. If you're a woman and you've been sexually abused, the strange thing that one of the things which goes through your mind is guilt. Even though it's not your fault, you didn't choose to do that, it was completely the other person's doing, still, women feel guilty. They feel that somehow they contributed, somehow they could have done something, they could have run away or screamed louder or whatever. Occasionally that does happen to a man as well. Men get raped too, but the frequency is very, very, very little compared to women. So I remember reading an account in a journal of a young man who got raped, by another man. One of the things which happened, he said, he knew what was going on. He wasn't consenting at all, but he froze. The fear and the confusion sometimes get so strong, you can't react. It was a very beautiful little description which explains why a person just can't run, even though they have legs. They can't punch, even though they've got arms. And sometimes they can't even scream, even though they've got a mouth. The psychological terror puts you into a state of disconnected consciousness where you can't fully participate in what's going on. You're just standing back looking at this terrible thing happening to you, frozen, unable to move. That's one of the reasons why people feel such guilt. When they understand they couldn't have done anything, that helps resolve their guilt. Or their anger. And sometimes that anger gets to all men, transferred, not just the person who perpetrated that act, but to everybody. On this occasion, like I do whenever I do counselling, I was just talking to a person on the car coming up here. The first few minutes, you really listen with everything you've got to this person without making any judgments. Basically, you check them out to find out where they are and how not intelligent they are, but how spiritually advanced they are. This woman, when I was checking her out, this was a great woman, someone who's very advanced. I looked at her and I told her she was lucky to have been raped. I can't say that to many people. This was a teaching technique to get very deep inside of her. Straight away she was shocked because no one had ever dared to say such a thing to her before. With her mind open, I explained what I meant. I said many people will be crippled emotionally by that experience. But for you, I think you can understand this, learn from this, transcend it, so that your task in the future will be to help other women who've been through that experience in a way which me as a male, as a monk, will never be able to do. You've been there, and I think that you'll be able to get through this without any emotional scars, but with an emotional richness which you'll be able to share with other women as no other person can do here in KL. Because you've been there, because you've been through it, because you know the way out of that black hole of former pain, you can hold another girl's hand. Say, "I know," and you mean it. And so you also know the way out. This is your task in life. That's why I said you're lucky. It's a terrible experience, but when you're through it, you'll be able to help so many other beings. You're lucky. Even such terrible experiences like that, you can make use of for compassion, for wisdom, for serving, for growth. This is what we mean by metta. The door of my heart is open to the past, no matter what happened, even the very worst of things. What I mean by that, once you embrace it, like I said, with those prisoner of war soldiers, once you forgive, only then are you free. Once you embrace, only then does the process of healing begin. Only when you're truthful, rather than hiding things away, can there be a sense of integration, growth, and then freedom. Loving kindness does lead to freedom. It doesn't obliterate the past or neglect it. It makes use of it to grow. And in that growth, there's freedom and compassion. That's with the anger towards other people. I was going to tell the story of the experience in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, but that was a story I told last night, and it's a moving story which I asked people to get the tape of the talk last night to hear about it, about a person in brief, a South African security man who had tortured to death an African activist in the ANC, the African National Congress, and he told what had happened in front of the widow, and the widow got up, approached the torturer and the killer of her husband and said, "I forgive you." It was one of the most moving times of that series of reconciliation councils. That a woman whose own husband had been unlawfully tortured and killed could actually forgive the torturer and the killer. Both people hugged and cried, sobbed. Only then was there healing, was there growth. That's what loving kindness is. It sometimes moves to such incredible depth and power. It's beyond reason, but coming from the heart, it heals so powerfully. If you can do that to someone else, to the past enemies which have hurt you, why can't you do that to yourself? In our modern world, people are just consumed by guilt. They just cannot let go of the mistakes of their past. And it's not that the mistakes should be just obliterated and not be dealt with. It's they're dealt with in the wrong way. Whenever we've made a mistake, we want to be punished. I saw that some years ago when one of the new
entrance to my monk factory some raw material which had come out from the world, which I had to transform into a monk. This is what a factory is all about. You get in the raw materials, you process them, and out the other end comes a monk. And so you get people from all walks of life. And this young man who'd come in, he was having a hard time, but he was a good guy. He came to confess to me one day that he'd gone into the kitchen in the afternoon and sneaked some food and made himself a sandwich or something. He's breaking the precepts. If you're training to be a monk, keep the 8 precepts, but he's not eating in the afternoon. So he came up to tell me, and I said, look, never mind, it's okay. Just learn next time not to do it. Everyone makes mistakes. I'm not going to throw you out of the monastery because of that. It's not a capital offence. I'm not going to call the police, for goodness sake. So just don't never do it again, okay? And thanks for telling me. He was not happy. He said, look, I don't think that's good enough. He said, I need a penance. I need to be punished to stop me doing it again. And again, I looked at him and realized that, you know, he's not going to be able to buy just plain forgiveness. He needs actually to learn some forgiveness. So, I thought in my mind, what's a traditional punishment in Australia? And we are a very strict monastery. Our tradition, the forest tradition of Thailand, is a very strict. So I thought, I know, I've got a suitable punishment for you. Many of you know that Australia started off as a penal colony. The British sent all their felons to Australia where they were treated very harshly. And one of the punishments there was a whipping with what we call the cat of nine tails. So I thought, okay, this is what we'll do. We'll give you 50 strokes of the cat. And this Adigarika, this trainee, he went white. He thought, my goodness, Ajahn Brahm's going to whip me. But then I explained in a Buddhism what 50 strokes of the cat really means. I said, in this monastery we've got a cat. Please find that cat and stroke it 50 times. Learn some compassion, for goodness sake. And maybe stroking a cat 50 times will teach you how to be kind and forgiving and be soft and be not so macho male and be more sensitive. So that is my usual punishment when people want a penance. They've got to find a cat and stroke it 50 times. 50 strokes of the cat. Because why is it that we want to punish ourselves? Does that really help at all? Punishing ourselves is what guilt is all about. Instead of punishing ourselves, we have this loving kindness which says, the door of my heart's open to me, no matter what I've ever done. Sometimes you just made a mistake, that's all. We're all allowed to make mistakes. When I went to school, now you get caned if you made a mistake, but all I learned from that punishment, all I learned was to make sure I never got caught again. That was the only thing I learned, to be cleverer next time, not to do the wrong things, but just to make sure you don't get caught. It's the same when we have speed cameras and other things. All we actually learn from many of the punishments in our world is to be more clever so we don't get caught. We never realize why it's wrong. That's why sometimes punishment doesn't work. Sometimes it's much better to have understanding. Especially, please, please, don't punish yourselves. When we punish ourselves, what we're really doing is denying ourselves happiness. We think we don't deserve to be happy. Which is why that what happens if you've misbehaved or you've done something wrong, you've hurt other people, you deny yourself happiness. Many people experience this with dysfunctional relationships. When you get married, you can't have a good relationship with your partner, basically because you think you don't deserve to. You don't deserve such happiness. You seek for punishment. Sometimes in life, people bring on sicknesses and diseases.
they don't think they deserve to be healthy. Many of the illnesses which people have are guilt related. Something you've done in the past, which maybe you've pushed deep under your mind, you can't even see it now, which is a cause for that not allowing yourself to be happy, which comes out in the stress which causes the diseases. Several times you've seen counseling people with diseases, especially chronic diseases, and they find out something they've done in the past, and they do an act of forgiveness, an act of loving kindness. The door of my heart's open no matter what you've done in the past. Me? I'm only a human being, I make mistakes. When you can do that, you find that you are free. Something changes in your mind, and something also changes in your body too. You become free. Forgiveness leads to healing, leads to happiness, leads to freedom. As usual, the path we take. So when we look upon the past, we can give it loving kindness, compassion to your past. Everything which has happened to you, it's always something which you can use. As I said last night, whenever you tread in the dog poo, never wipe it from your feet. Always take it back to your house and dig it under your mango tree. 1 year later, your mangoes will be sweeter than the year before. But when you taste that mango, you must remember that what you're really tasting is dog poo transformed. Now you understand the simile, all of that poo from your life, all of the terrible things which you've done, which have been done to you, that's just fertilizer, opportunities for growth. It makes mangoes, your life, sweeter. So don't get negative. Give it loving kindness. And the next time anything terrible happens to you, whoopee, more fertilizer from my mango tree. Now you understand just how, through loving kindness towards the past, through embracing it, the good and the bad, wonderful things can happen. I'll finish off with one story before we have the Q&A session. I read this again in a journal some years ago. In the United States, 20 or 30 years ago, there was a student going through medical school. The fees were very high, his parents weren't wealthy, so he had to work his way through med school. He got jobs during the vacation on weekends. So I was saying last night, when I was at college too, I got jobs selling encyclopedias. This fellow was selling hairbrushes or something, door-to-door salesman. The worst possible job you have can get, but when you're a student, you'll take anything. And there he was, selling door-to-door. He knocked on one house. The lady who answered said, "No, I don't want any of that." But she paused and looked at this poor young man who'd been selling door-to-door all day, and it was a hot day in the summer. And she paused and said, "Young man, have you had anything to eat today?" The young man said, "Not till early this morning. It was late afternoon." "Just wait for a few moments, young man." And she went into her kitchen and brought him out a glass of milk and a couple of cookies, which he very happily ate. Many, many years later, when he had graduated, when he had gone through the system and become a very well-known oncologist, I think he was, a cancer specialist. When he was an oncologist, he was treating one patient who had a very, very severe cancer, which basically there was very little hope. But he decided to give this one patient some special attention, to really give her a chance.
He managed to call some of his friends, which he'd met in seminars around the United States, some of the very experts, surgeons, radiologists, and he got all these very, very top doctors and specialists to help treat this patient. And it was successful. He pulled her through, almost miraculously, from the edge of death. She was in remission and could face many, many years of high quality life. It was a success story. But when this woman got her bill, and you all know how much it costs in the United States, when she got her medical bill, she was afraid to open it. When she opened it, she saw on the bill nothing to pay. Paid with a glass of milk and two cookies 20 years ago. It was that woman. He remembered her. He could never forget that name of a woman who just paused to give a hungry student a couple of cookies and a glass of milk. That saved her hundreds of thousands of dollars out of gratitude, remembering the beautiful things which happened to him in his past. That paid for her bill and kept her alive. That's how we should remember the past. The times that someone has helped us, and we pay them back 1,000 times over. So if you are going to recall your past, forgive all the rotten things which other people have done. Have loving kindness towards yourself so you can get rid of all the guilt. You can just let it go. Be kind to yourself. And if you think you need punishment, go and find a cat or a dog and stroke it until you've got no guilt left. And you do remember the past. Remember all the wonderful things which happened to you. If you can do that, you know how to have loving kindness, metta, towards the past. So guilt, anger, revenge all disappear. And you can grow so wonderfully well in inspiration, repeating the successes and the beautiful things which make you a wonderful human being. So, that is having loving kindness towards the past. Coming up after lunch is having loving kindness towards the future. But now, I have loving kindness. I'm opening the door of my heart to your questions.